Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Last night's Raw emanating from Albany, New York, pretty much near me. And it's the go-home show to this Saturday's Survivor Series War Games. So I guess I was expecting something special. And I think what we got was pretty much business as usual. Not to say that it was a bad show, but I'm starting to get this feeling that Raw has become the secondary show to SmackDown, even in the WWE's eyes. Now, that didn't used to be the case. We'd said here for a long time that SmackDown was a better show. A lot of fans understand SmackDown's a better show. But the WWE always said, you know, our flagship programming is Raw. Well, that flagship programming, I think, is in a little bit of trouble because I look over and I see a lot of SmackDown guys on Raw. Now, I understand you're trying to promote the Survivor Series. I get it. But at the same time, your star power over there, it's just not the same. It's just not. Now, we had Kevin Owens come out to start Raw and talk about why he joined the team and said it had nothing to do with Sami Zayn. We get that. And this leads, of course, to our first match, which I understand as well. They want to hook you immediately. They don't want you switching stations. They want to hook you immediately with a good match. The Brawling Brutes versus the Judgment Day in a six-man tag team match seems to me to be the main event of the night. Because we're looking at things like Almost versus Gargano, Austin Theory versus Ali, Matt Riddle and Elias versus Alpha Academy, McIntyre, Baron Corbin, Rhea Ripley and Asuka, and you say to yourself, well, what's the most important match? Yes, I know Rhea Ripley and Asuka had a stipulation for the Survivor Series War Games match, but I think it's not a stretch to say that the Brawling Brutes and Judgment Day, Judgment Day feels like, you know, they're, at least they're attempting to make the Judgment Day the first or second most important faction on Monday Night Raw. So anyway, the Brawling Brutes defeat the Judgment Day in a six-man tag team match. Dominic Mysterio, I believe, was the one who was pinned with a brogue kick. Sheamus hits him with a brogue kick. Yes, there was distraction by the OC who came down. But all we've heard for a long period of time is that we're really going to pull out the stops to promote the Judgment Day. Judgment Day is going to be our top faction. And they do an awful lot of losing. And I know there's a lot of people who's going to say, well, the Brawling Brutes had to win because they're the ones involved in the big match at the pay-per-view. Finn Balor's got a big match at the pay-per-view. So, listen, the Judgment Day has never felt super important to me. Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio and the chemistry of that relationship feels like it is far greater than the Judgment Day itself. Damian Priest and Finn Balor feel like afterthoughts to me. I'm sorry. So, look, they had a decent match. I don't think I can recall a time when Sheamus is quite this over. Sheamus is definitely over, and it looks like Sheamus is gunning toward trying to get a shot at Roman Reigns, and they may do that. They may pull the trigger on that. Of course, Kevin Owens is trying to do that too, so we'll see. As far as the rest of the match, well, once again, we're stuck with Damian Priest is supposed to be the I guess, the power of the team. But when you're on a, when you're trying to go against the Brawling Brutes, you have Sheamus and you have Ridge Holland. It's not going to work. So, you know, he looked like odd man out. Finn Balor did his normal job. Rhea Ripley didn't play that much of a factor. And Dominic was the one who got pinned. Now, I would have left Dominic not getting pinned. Dominic is doing a really good job of playing a sneaky, sort of cowardly heel who always finds his way out of a situation. And Rhea Ripley and him are the two stars, of obviously, of the Judgment Day. And I think I would let Damian Priest take that loss. I really do. I think the fans are gearing up for a Dominic loss, you know, and they probably want it to come at the hands of Ray down the road or something. I think I would have let that simmer and not had Dominic get clearly pinned. And, I mean, he did a great job. He took the brogue kick better than 90% of people I've seen take the brogue kick. But I just think it was the wrong guy, Todd. I would have rather seen Damian Priest get pinned in this situation only because I think Dominic's heat is greater than Damian Priest. So let that heat simmer for a while.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, when Dominic took that pin, like, I'm thinking to myself, they pinned the wrong guy. He should not be pinned. They should have Priest or Balor to get pinned by Sheamus or something.
Well, I wouldn't do Balor because Balor's got the big match coming up with AJ, so you can't really have Balor pinned. And I know they consider Dominic the weak link, but I think it's time to stop considering Dominic the weak link when he's the one who's putting, you know, the eyes on the product as far as the Judgment Day is concerned. Fans are into the Judgment Day not because Damian Priest is in it. Fans are into the Judgment Day because they like the Rhea Ripley, Dominic Mysterio storyline, and that should have continued to simmer. Absolutely 100%, no doubt about, should have continued to simmer. By having him not only lose, but lose clean to the brogue kick, I think it takes away some of that heat. Fans were waiting for that moment. Fans were waiting for the Dominic's going to get what's coming to him moment. And I think you needed to let that simmer a little bit longer. So I'm a little confused about why Dominic took the pinfall in this, Mike.
I'm confused about it either, but you got to give it to Dominic. He took the bro kick like a champ, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he made that bro kick look really, really good. And look, you got with that type of move, you got to have some people to take that. And he obviously understands the sport, you know, obviously. And you're right. Him and Rhea Ripley are what's making this thing is what's making this group go right now. So I wouldn't have had Dominic lose, take the pinfall. It should have been. Damian Priest.
There's no question it should have been Damian Priest, and I'll even make a better argument. If you really want Sheamus to go against Roman Reigns, the argument could have been Damian Priest is every bit as big as Roman Reigns. Probably taller, maybe not quite as built, but Damian Priest is a big guy in a powerhouse like Roman Reigns. If he lost to that brogue kick clean, the announcers could have said, look, Damian Priest is a sizable individual like Roman Reigns. Lights out if Sheamus hits that thing. Dominic, it doesn't feel the same way. So if you are going to build up Sheamus versus Roman Reigns, wouldn't you have rather had the powerhouse guy in the group take that loss? Damian Priest has nothing to do with the Survivor Series. Finn does. Now, I know, neither does Dominic, but once again, Dominic is doing that slow heat burn where fans want to see him lose, but he never quite does. If you could have had Dominic remain virtually undefeated by virtue of making a tag when, you know, whenever he's in trouble, just getting out of trouble any way he can, putting his foot on the rope, Rhea Ripley helping him to the point where you say, well, I guess he's never going to. His team might lose, but he's not going to be the guy taking the pinfall because he's too sneaky and he's got too much help. then fans would have anticipated the time when he's going to get clean pinned. Well, you gave it away last night. You took all that heat and gave it away last night, and so that Sheamus got the pop. Okay, well, Sheamus would have got the pop beating Damian Priest, who you don't seem to have any real plans for. So I'm not sure why you let Dominic. I just think that was a really, really bad, no pun intended, judgment call. Speaking of, you know, this is the thing. If Vince McMahon were still in charge, the internet would be filled with people going absolutely out of their minds saying, that old son of a bitch, he doesn't know what he's doing, he's crazy, get him out of here. Here comes Johnny Gargano, the guy you all wanted to see, right? Johnny Wrestling, he's going to just set the freaking WWE on fire, but not with Vince McMahon in charge, because Vince McMahon does not understand how to deal with a guy like Johnny Gargano. Only Triple H does. What the hell has Johnny Gargano done since he's gotten here except count the ring lights? He's lost to Otis, Chad Gable. Now, you knew he was losing to Almost. When The Miz came out and said, I can wrestle, but I found somebody who could take my spot, and Almost comes out, you know, he's not beating Almost. Johnny Gargano has lost so much. And I never noticed how annoying Johnny Gargano's voice is or his mannerisms is in NXT. They covered it up really well and just made him like a solid underdog Daniel Bryan type, you know, wrestler. With them trying to get him to be a sports entertainer and do all this stuff, he is failing miserably. Miserably. And okay, they let him knock, he didn't even knock Almost down. So he almost knocks himself down by running into the buckle. And otherwise, it's a squash match. This is, you know, if Vince McMahon had done this, Mike, right now, the internet would be filled with people saying, yeah, Vince is killing Johnny Gargano. It figures. Vince doesn't like any of the NXT guys. I wish Triple H was in charge. Well, Triple H is in charge, Mike. And Johnny Gargano is absolutely shit in the bed.
You look at what's happening with Jericho in AEW in his group, the Jericho Appreciation Society, and Other than what's his name, that group is a lot of little smaller type guys. Jericho's not that big a guy,
and neither is Guevara.
I mean, the biggest guy in the group is probably Jake Hager. And still, he'd be a medium sized guy. I mean, he's 260 pounds, but he's not 300 pounds. So you look at these guys, and you look at the fact that when Gargano was running his group, the biggest guy in the group was probably Dexter Lumis.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So you look at that, and a lot of the guys in Jericho's group are. Sports can be the sports entertainment. Guevara has a better, frankly, Guevara is better at sports entertaining than is Gargano. That's a fact. That's just a fact. You know, fact of life.
Eli Drake. Gargano has a problem with it, and I'll tell you what his problem is he's not a good actor. So when you give him something to do that's supposed to solidify him as like a smart face who's getting over on the heels, he doesn't come off as a smart face who's getting over on the heels. He comes off as a smarmy, self-indulgent, creepy little weirdo who's bothering people. And that's not who you want to root for. There are ways to do that. There are ways to be that guy that you say, well, he's outsmarting the heels, but he's doing it in a way that we like. There were guys who were masters at that. Daniel Bryan was one of them. Johnny Gargano's not that. He's just not. The way to use Johnny Gargano is less talk, more wrestling. I wouldn't put them up in the main events. Obviously, he's too small to really compete on a major basis with what the WWE is looking for. But certainly in the secondary titles, he can. Certainly he can. And I would push him being a lot less vocal, because he's not good at it, and a lot more physical, where you just say he's a man of few words, but he's great in the ring. Otherwise, you're running into this where he just comes off smarmy. He even has a smarmy sort of a voice. I never realized it before because he didn't talk all that much. Now when he's doing this whole entire thing and he's doing a lot of this talk, and I'm like, he's coming off really not well. Just not well. And I don't know if he can correct it. There were other people who suffered this problem. Bianca Belair suffered this problem when she came up. She was very hard to root for because she had that smarmy look on her face, and she was always, I'm this and I'm that and I'm better than. And you're like, who wants to root for somebody like that? And I warned everybody, she's going to get booed out of the building if she continues this, but she didn't continue it. She adjusted it. And now when she says the EST, it's done in a way that she says, I'm confident, not I'm arrogant. And I don't know if Johnny Gargano can correct this because you're making him creepy. You're making him like a little creepy guy who's going around trying to set people up and sticking his nose in everybody's business. And I don't know. It's just not working for me. You heard the crowd was totally dead when him and Almost fought. Now, you can't have him beat Almost. But why'd you even have him fight Almost? See, this is the thing. If put yourself in a year ago. And this had happened. Right now, the internet would be filled, Todd, with people saying, Vince McMahon's throwing Johnny Gargano to the wolves. How come we don't hear it when Triple H is running things?
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with this thing with Johnny Gargano thing, he's not acting like a face. We've been saying this for the last month. He's been looking to act like a heel. And he's doing that smarmy and that sneakiness. All that other crap is being like the Daffy Duck thing.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, actually. Yeah, that's what it reminds me of. We then had Seth Rollins do a really kind of a weird interview. I don't know what I think of it. Made a Goonies reference, probably most people didn't get. And then made a Cody Rhodes reference, which is odd if you want him to continue to try to be a face. I don't know why you're bringing up the Cody Rhodes thing. It's just weird. I don't know what's going on there. We now know we're getting a three-way dance. That'll be interesting. But I don't know. I don't think this is one of Seth Rollins' better promos, Mike. And it blurred the lines again between whether he's really going to go face or he's staying in that sort of gray area of heel.
Right. And it appears to me that it also appears to me that they're kind of buying time because they know she's coming back. Right. They know Becky's coming back. Right. And they know that when Becky comes back, she's going to be cheered. They know that. Right. So I mean, this could be just simple as buying time. And by the way, Marcus, tell me that the way they have Seth Rollins has his hair colored, tell me he doesn't look like Michael P.S. Hayes.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, young Michael P.S. Hayes. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, he's changed his gimmick because he's colored his hair different. Yeah. He's not doing the laugh as much either. Just a weird promo. I don't know. I don't think I would have mentioned Cody. That just throws back images of him being a real SOB heel, and I didn't think that's what you wanted, but I guess. We then had Austin Theory versus Mustafa Ali, and Mustafa Ali has quickly become the what's the right word for it? He's the ultimate underdog who never wins. He's the guy who gives you a good fight, but at the end of the day, he shows how gutsy he is, but he loses. And that's it. That's what he is. And I don't know whose cornflakes he crapped in. But he not only got beat up once, got beat up twice. First, Austin Theory, who's looking really, I'll tell you, Austin Theory's doing a really good job. I know there are people who don't like him. And I know there are people who said, well, I really hated the gimmick of the selfies and the stupid kid and the dumb grin. And I'm like, okay, well, he's not doing that anymore. And there are still people saying, I still don't like him. Well, I don't know what you don't like about him. He's very, very good in the ring. He's very, very good on the mic. And I still say, despite everything he's going through, this is a guy who eventually you are going to flip and he is going to be a top face. Because everything he does as a heel isn't all that bad. And his gimmick is based on his talent, not him being a heel. It's not like, well, if he flipped tomorrow, if somebody did something horrible to him, if some, you know, whatever, jumped him, you wouldn't root for him? Yes, you would. Yeah, you would. So you got that on the back burner. You got him flipping face eventually and becoming a top face on the back burner. And right now you're solidifying it by saying he is actually really good. He's just got a chip on his shoulder. He's got a bad attitude. He's willing to get ahead at any cost because he's young and breaking in. But those aren't egregious crimes. And eventually, they're toughening him up now. And eventually, I'm telling you, it's not going to be this year. It's not going to be even maybe not even next year. But eventually, Austin Theory will make a really, really good face. It's like John Cena. Remember when Cena came in with the whole thugonomics and the whole he was a badass and he was a chip on his shoulder and he had a loud mouth and all that kind of stuff, and then look what he became. Same thing's going to happen with Theory if he stays healthy. They had a really good match. Theory wins. Then, of course, Bobby Lashley appears on the screen and says, stay right where you are because I'm coming down there to basically kick your ass, which he tries to do, but Theory kind of runs away. Bobby Lashley chases him and runs it down. It's, you know, what can you say? All three of these guys, Bobby Lashley, Austin Theory, and Seth Rollins, all three of them are gray area. Seth Rollins is not a full-blown face yet. Bobby Lashley mauling on Ali for no real good reason, that's heelish. And Austin Theory is clearly a heel. So I think all of these guys, Mike, are in that gray area, which makes it sort of interesting that they're going to have the three-way dance.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see which one in that match, which one does the sort of, you know, foot on the ropes, the type of things that an actual heel would do to try and win the match. They're teasing that they want Seth Rollins to be a face, but you would expect the face not to kind of, you know, you try to get the pin with the foot on the ropes, right, or something to that effect, poke in the eye or whatever, you know. So we got to see how they're going to play this. Yeah, and you're right. Maybe not right now, but probably I would say this time next year or at the beginning of 2024, you know, is when they're going to flip what's his name? Because remember, it took them a while to flip Cena. I mean, they didn't flip Cena until after he did that whole ruthless aggression thing.
Right. Well, you see, that's the thing. You can hear even the announcers building it up early when they're saying, Austin Theory is standing up to Bobby Lashley. Even though he did run away, initially he stood up to Bobby Lashley. It's not like he was a total coward and said, "Oh, here comes Bobby Lashley, I'm running." He didn't do that. They're not making him a chicken shit heel. They're making him a bit of an egotistical heel and a guy who's overly confident in his own abilities, but they're not really making him the Miz-type heel or something like that. They're making him, you know, sort of determined and sort of brave in some ways. Not backing down from people necessarily. So, I don't know. You know, and even the announcers mentioned it. So, we'll see. As far as who's going to play the heel and who's going to play the face in that three-way, that's tough to say. I mean, Austin Theory is definitely going to be the heel. I think Bobby Lashley's just a tweener, really. You know, it depends on your perspective of him. I think Seth is going to do the face. That's why I wish he didn't mention Cody Rhodes and that whole thing, because it just harkens back to a time when, you know, they're trying to make you forget about stuff like that. So I'm not sure that was the best thing. But Austin Theory, Todd, for sure, I think, is a blue chipper here in the WWE, and I think he's got a really, really good future if he stays healthy.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Austin Theory, if he stays healthy enough, he could be a big-time star in the near future. Well, like you said, when the Survivor Series comes up, I think you're going to see Austin Theory be the heel and holding the ropes for the win and everything. And like you said, he's going to be a big-time star when he gets up to the top.
Yeah, I mean, we'll discuss, obviously, on Friday our thoughts about who's going to win some of these matches at Survivor Series. But certainly, this one's one of the more interesting ones. We then have Alpha Academy, who collectively, or singularly, I should say, have beaten both Elias and Matt Riddle. And now they're going to go for a tag team win against Elias and Matt Riddle. I've never seen anyone try less to promote someone as they are trying to do Elias. His return should have been a big deal. Every single one of his matches, at least the main matches, if you don't want to do it every week so it gets old, fine. But every single one of his main matches, he should have a song ready. Nah, he's not even doing that anymore. He's just walking out with a guitar. Matt Riddle's stock has really dropped since Randy Orton has unfortunately suffered his injury, and I think he went through some kind of procedure. His wife posted pictures of him recovering in a hospital, so I think maybe on his back or whatever. I'm not 100% sure. We'll find out for you. But he's not coming back soon. And I think Matt Riddle's going to be the guy that suffers, because by the time Randy Orton, if Randy Orton comes back, and they want to do that feud, I don't think Matt Riddle's going to be high enough up on the card to justify a feud with Randy Orton. I really don't. His stock has fallen quick. It really has. And it looks like they're just going to substitute Elias and try to make this the new, RK-Bro, so to speak. In fact, they don't have anywhere near that chemistry. They have nowhere near that chemistry. Now, they did beat Alpha Academy. But it was, and they're saying, oh, this could be the making of something. And Corey Graves says, yeah, you're absolutely right. These guys did well. They have chemistry. No, they don't have any chemistry. If you're really going to do this the right way, then you got to put some time and effort into it. And you really got to say they're actually like two members of a band. Let Riddle play the stupid bongos while Elias plays the guitar and sings, or the keyboard and sings, or whatever, and try to make it at least funny enough or charming enough or charismatic enough to you say, well, these guys actually think they're a band and kind of funny. It's not working. You're better off pushing Alpha Academy. So I don't think I've ever seen anybody really take – we speculated, Mike, that it was Randy Orton who was single-handedly giving Matt Riddle the rub that put him as on top. And man, were we right, because when Randy Orton's not there, you don't see that same Riddle.
You don't see that same Riddle. And frankly, I know this other guy's hurt right now, but it would make more sense if they put Rick Boogs with Elias.
Elias, yeah. I agree with that. Yeah, if they wanted to do that or even have a three-man do that, you could get some good stuff out of that. But what they're doing now, Elias and Matt Riddle is not form. It's just not going to be a team that people are going to get into. The problem is you're handcuffing both of them. The reason is the only time that Matt Riddle gets over is when, like, he's this goofy guy and Orton's the straight man. Elias isn't a good straight man because Elias is supposed to be goofy. So if they're both goofy, it doesn't really work. You sort of need the straight man. That's what Randy Orton was. Then you're not letting Elias do what it is that makes him charismatic, which is make up songs about his opponents and sing and get a lot of mic time. You're giving him no mic time. And then you want him to get over. It's not going to happen. This is another Triple H mistake. So listen, I'm just telling you like it is. If Vince McMahon was doing this stuff, you'd be screaming at the top of your lungs, "Well, Vince McMahon's ruining these people." How come you're not screaming Triple H is ruining these people? Because you like Triple H, and you didn't like Vince McMahon. Anyway, Matt Riddle and Elias defeat Alpha Academy. I guess they're destined to be a tag team. We then get backstage, once again, Baron Corbin playing poker with JBL. And this time it's Drew McIntyre who comes up to him. I don't know. Drew McIntyre's, you know, for whatever reason there, so fine. Gets into it with Corbin, challenges Corbin, and I said, well, this is it. Corbin's had a little bit of a run as a guy who JBL's going to push to the top, and that run is ending now because I know for a fact he's not beating Drew McIntyre. I know for a fact he's not. Now, okay, Drew McIntyre certainly let Corbin look like he was equal to the task. And yes, we got the funny moment from Akira Tozawa jumping into JBL's arms and stealing his hat and everything. But the end is still the end. And the end is we saw Baron Corbin pinned. After JBL had said he was a wrestling god and nobody here could pin him and blah, 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 you saw him pinned. It's the equivalent of saying Mr. Perfect lost his fourth match into the WWE before he ever had a title shot. The only way the Corbin thing was going to work is if he remained undefeated and people were saying JBL has brought out a side of Corbin no one has ever seen. JBL has somehow installed into Corbin something that makes him extraordinarily dangerous, and he's not easy to beat, and it's going to take a hell of an effort to do it. No, you threw him to the wolves with Drew McIntyre on a Raw show that meant nothing. Meant nothing. So that experiment's over. It's back to the mid-card for Baron Corbin. There's no shame to losing to Drew McIntyre, but when you're trying to get built to get to that stage, there is. And Corbin should still be fighting, you know, mid-card guys. Are they doing that to Almost? Has Almost been rolled up? Has Almost fought Drew McIntyre? No, they're keeping Almost sort of protected. You didn't protect Baron Corbin. You threw him into the Drew McIntyre pool for no reason. There was no reason for Drew McIntyre to even have a match last night. By the way, doesn't it look like SmackDown dominates all the Raw stars, right? How many SmackDown guys beat the Raw guys last night, right? It's sad because I thought JBL was doing some good work on the mic. But at the end of the day, Mike, I think this experiment's over. I mean, we've seen him pinned now, so he doesn't feel special.
Yeah, and look, the best, like you said, the best part of that whole situation was Akira Tozawa. Anything he does, it seems, turns to gold. I mean, JBL comes out with that hat, and of course, you know, he comes out wearing that hat, and of course, what's his name, had his little, I believe, a bowler hat or whatever it was that he wore. But you knew that something was going to happen. You knew it. Now, I mean, Akira Tozawa, they have something with Akira Tozawa. They just got to figure out how to use him correctly, you know. He can wrestle. He can still wrestle. He's a little small. He's the antithesis of what Johnny Gargano is. People, he's small. Him and Johnny Gargano about the same size. Maybe Gargano's a little bit bigger, but they're about the same size. But the problem is unlike Gargano, Tozawa has personality. He has charisma.
There's no question that Tozawa's been doing an excellent job. Most of it's been comedy, and unfortunately, he's so good at it, they seem to not want to take him seriously and let him actually wrestle much. They keep him as, you know, a sort of an R-Truth type guy. You know, you just go out and do the comedy stuff, and everybody will laugh, and that's how you contribute to wrestling. It's a shame because he's a really good wrestler. And maybe I thought for a while that 24/7 belt might get converted into a belt that was like meant for the undercard. You know, whereas you figure, you know, top guys like Drew McIntyre's not going to compete for it, but guys like Tozawa and, you know, guys like that would compete for it. Maybe Mustafa Ali and those type of people would have an outlet to have like a TV championship or something. That's what I thought they might do with it. Nope. Instead, they're keeping Tozawa comedy, which, listen, Tozawa could bitch about it and moan about it and say, I want to wrestle. Yeah, I don't know how old Tozawa is. But instead, he's really embraced it, Todd, and all of the Tozawa spots are always amusing and they're always entertaining. So, I mean, you can't complain.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, by the looks of it, with Tozawa, when he came out last night, he kind of looked like Mr. Anderson, the haircut and the hair color, the look.
Yeah, they changed his look. And listen, every federation needs one of those guys that it's like he's just sort of comedy fun, but people really like him. He's mostly there to entertain, and then when something bad happens to him, whatever heel does something bad to him gets a lot of heat because he's liked. It's a good guy to get heat off of. So maybe we'll see Baron Corbin do something horrible to Tozawa in the future, and we'll have some sort of a rematch or something going on. Maybe. We'll see. We then get to the feature match, which is Rhea Ripley and Asuka, and this is to determine the advantage in the War Games match on Saturday. Now, it's fairly obvious that the bad guys are going to get the advantage. I mean, that's sort of the way it kind of has to be, right? So I already know Asuka's losing. But she puts on a really good show. Asuka's very good at what she does, obviously. My issue with this, in case people missed it, is that the crowd got mad. And I don't mean mad in like, oh, we don't want Rhea Ripley to win, we like Asuka, so we're going to get mad. No, the crowd got mad at being ripped off. And they got mad at Bianca Belair, and there's no reason to be mad at Bianca Belair because she's not the one who made the decision. But when she's out there saying, we have a fifth member of the team, but we're not going to reveal it tonight on Raw, we're going to reveal it on SmackDown, people booed. And the reason they booed is, we're here on Raw. Why is everything a SmackDown angle? We're here on Raw. Okay, people say, well, it's probably going to be a SmackDown star. Yeah, it probably is, but so what? So was a lot of the people who were there last night. Crowd felt like they were saying, you're second best. We're going to reveal it on our big show. The show that matters. You know, the show you don't have tickets to. That's a very ill-advised thing. And to make Bianca Belair come out there and say that, you knew she was going to get booed. And you saw the looks on everybody's faces when the boos hit. They were like, ugh. That's a gut punch. They're all behind us. Everything's great. And now they're booing us because we basically told them, you're not worthy of knowing who our partner is. We know who it is. And you wait. It's going to be somebody great. But we're not telling you. We'll wait until the SmackDown crowd. Well, I would bet my left arm that it's Becky Lynch. She's certainly ready to come back. She's already had that face-to-face thing kind of sticking up for Bianca Belair. So I would imagine it's Becky Lynch. Originally, I thought it could potentially be Edge's wife, Beth Phoenix, but I don't think so. And then some people were saying, oh, it's Sasha Banks, because if you look, you'll see like that shadow has blue hair. It's not Sasha Banks. I don't think Sasha Banks is coming back. She's already changed her name for performances for wrestling and filed for copyrights under that name. No, not for wrestling purposes, but still. I don't think Sasha's coming back. I'd be pretty confident that it's Becky Lynch. And if it's Becky Lynch, then you can be pretty damn sure what team's winning, because they're not going to have Becky Lynch come back in a losing effort. So Rhea Ripley gets the win. Fairly clean win. And they're going to have the advantage at War Games. That's why I know it's going to be somebody. Some people say Charlotte. I don't think it's Charlotte. I think it's Becky. And that'll be the big surprise, the go-home surprise on SmackDown probably. The problem with this, Mike, is, again, it's making Raw look like the secondary show. It's making that product look like it's inferior to the SmackDown product, even in the eyes of the fans, which I think is a mistake.
Right. But here's something else to think about. There is another person that it could be that probably on their way back to the WWE that it could be other than Becky Lynch. Yeah, we want to see Becky Lynch come back, and particularly I do. I want to see if she's made the decision to maybe gain a few pounds here and there to make her look better. But there is another person, and this other person is a SmackDown star, or would be a SmackDown star when they come back, and that's Naomi.
Yeah, but I don't think she's a big enough name. You know, I don't think it's like on our big announcement is the person we've been waiting for is Naomi, and people would be like, okay. It'd be like saying Natalia. Okay. No, I think it's a big name. I think it's going to be somebody that people are going to be like, oh, shit. Otherwise, they'd have just said it. If it was Naomi, I think they'd have just said it. Because I don't think it's a big enough announcement. People would be like, oh, she's back. That's cool. But I don't think it's the same thing as saying, oh, man, Becky Lynch is back from her injury. Now this is getting good. You know, Becky Lynch is going to be somebody, a force to be reckoned with. I don't think that Naomi's going to carry that same thing, and I think if they're going to bring her back, they're going to bring her back somehow to connect her with the bloodline and not anybody else. So I don't think it'll be her. I think it'll be Becky. Now, I could be surprised. It could be Beth Phoenix. It could be for one night only. It could absolutely could be Beth Phoenix. And it would make some sense because Rhea Ripley's like, I don't care who your opponent is. Well, she'd care if it was Beth Phoenix because she's the one who put her out, and there'd be a big grudge there. By the way, Mia Yim got a name change, huh? They're calling her. I don't know what they called her, but I guess that's what they're really going to call her from now on. Anyway, afterwards, of course, the fight breaks out. And then that's basically how it's left. You know, if you look at this on paper, just look at it on paper for a minute. The Brawling Brutes, yeah, good, but they're SmackDown guys, right? They had the Judgment Day, had Almost versus Gargano, Austin Theory versus Mustafa Ali, Matt Riddle, and Elias versus Alpha Academy. Baron Corbin, who's also a SmackDown, against Drew McIntyre. Rhea Ripley, Asuka, this is kind of a weak go-home card. Yeah, they furthered some angles. And yeah, they had the parking lot brawl between the OC and the Judgment Day. Why in the world this isn't a Survivor Series match is beyond me. You've actually promoted it as if it should be. You have the entire OC battling it out with the entire Judgment Day backstage, and they say, but it's only going to be AJ and Finn. I don't get that. Don't get it. I mean, there is a match that it's so obvious that would be a perfect match. Now, let's not do that. I don't get that. This card is kind of weak. Yes, you had a couple of good matches. The Brawling Brutes and Judgment Day was a good match. Austin Theory versus Mustafa Ali was a good match. McIntyre and Corbin put on a pretty good match. And so did Rhea Ripley and Asuka. But at the end of the day, this does not feel important. It almost feels like, well, you can watch it if you want, or you can just tune into SmackDown because we're going to recap everything that happened on Raw because really none of it mattered that much. And you can't do that. You got to make both of these shows must-watch where you say, I can't miss Raw. Because if I miss Raw, then I'm not going to know what's happening on that side of the aisle as opposed to SmackDown. You're kind of saying, if you miss Raw, don't worry. SmackDown's here, and we're going to recap everything that happened on Raw because our superstars are over there, too. And then so it doesn't matter. So it's almost like Raw don't matter. That's a problem. Raw's got to matter. Last night, it didn't feel like it mattered. A lot of this stuff just felt like fluff. Yes, you furthered, like I said, you furthered the one War Games match. Maybe two War Games matches, but you had to do it with the SmackDown stars. I don't know, man. I seen more bad last night than good. I seen Johnny Gargano, who a lot of people like. I personally am not a huge fan of his. I'm a fan of his wrestling. I'm not a fan of his, entertainment, put it that way. Literally thrown to the wolves. To the point where even I said, God almighty, what did Johnny Gargano do wrong? That he got to get squashed by almost. You seen kind of Mustafa Ali be, he's just going to be the punching bag. You seen the degradation of Matt Riddle down to a team with Elias, and Elias has no longer got any charisma. I don't know what happened. And Matt Riddle has basically lost a lot of his. You've seen the destruction of the Baron Corbin angle because the wrestling god was pinned dead center middle of the ring. So I don't know what all the hype was about. There's not a man that can beat him. That didn't take long, did it? So I think there was more destructive things than good things. That should never be the case, especially in a go-home show. That should never be the case. So I'm giving it a C-. I really think this was very ill thought out. Very ill thought out. And there were rare occasions when things were good and made sense, but it was overwhelmed, Todd, by a lot that didn't make sense. So that's the best I can give it.
I'm going to give it a C- as well. Like you said, it was not like, it was more like a SmackDown superstar show last night. It didn't feel like it had the Raw feel.
Yeah, I know they want to cross-promote because the matches are cross-promoted, but at the same time, it sort of made Raw look like the B or C show, and it managed to kind of just, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not a big fan, and I said I wasn't a big fan of the Baron Corbin angle because Corbin don't look like he belongs with JBL. But if you were going to run with it, the only successful way to run with it is to say that JBL somehow instilled in Corbin something that made Corbin very special. Whatever was missing from Baron Corbin, JBL injected into him. And now Corbin is a force to be reckoned with. No, you didn't do that. A few weeks you made him that way, and then it was straight to, counting the ring lights. So that's a mistake. Having Bianca Belair come out and say, we got a great mystery partner that's going to blow the roof off the building, but we're not telling you. We're going to tell the SmackDown crowd. That was a huge mistake. Setting up Elias in a tag team with Riddle when both guys are not the straight men, they're both weird, it's not going to work. There's not going to be any back-and-forth chemistry there that's going to be fun, I don't think, unless Elias can turn it around and be a straight man, which I doubt. You're not giving Elias any chance to get over with the crowd because you're not letting him do a shtick at all. At all. And Johnny Gargano has went from someone who everyone anticipated can't wait to see him on the main roster to he's a big name jabron. That's what's happened, Mike. So, I can't give this any higher than C-.
I can't give it any higher than C- as well. And frankly, according to this article that I'm reading, that this is Mia Yim's name change is her idea.
Okay.
So, and it's The name change, the word is the Korean word for crazy. It's Korean for crazy, and she's Korean and all that stuff. So obviously, if it's her idea, and I guess Triple H has signed off on it, so whatever. You know, if she wants to do that, let her do it. You know,
the thing that bothers me, I guess, is if you're really going to have somebody go against Rhea Ripley, that would have been like, whoa. I don't think it's Mia Yim. You know, they're making Mia Yim, and Rhea Ripley's doing a good job of making Mia Yim look like, well, she can handle me. She's, you know, almost my size, almost as powerful. But I'm not buying it because she doesn't look like it. Should have been Raquel Rodriguez. Raquel Rodriguez clearly bigger than her, and I would assume she's sort of booked to be more powerful than Rhea Ripley. I would have went that direction, but I guess, Mike, they wanted to bring Mia Yim back, and they thought this was the best solution, but I'm not sold on it.
I'm not sold on it either, and if they want to do the crazy girl thing, then it shouldn't have been Mia Yim either. It should have been Nikki Cross, because you could have played
it
all
well.
Mike,
that would have been interesting, because they had a tag team at one time.
Yeah.
Rhea Ripley and Nikki Cross. And you could have said, look, Nikki Cross has literally went berserk. The best part of that whole backstage segment when they were watching the match is Nikki Cross sitting in a locker paying no attention. That was really cool. If Nikki Cross can do those weird things like that, she would have been really cool with the OC. But, I mean, you really could have had, like, you know, AJ Styles and maybe Carl Anderson say, are you sure we can count on her? I mean, she's a little off-center, right? You know, Anderson could have been like, yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, she's a little weird. Let's talk to Gallows and see what he says. And I don't see anything wrong with her. What's wrong? I mean, that would have been funny if he thinks she's perfectly fine. And Rhea Ripley could have said, well, I know her, and she's a nobody. She thought she was a superhero. She ain't no big deal. And then when she's berserk like this, this is not something that Rhea Ripley's ever seen. So it could have been a big shock to Rhea Ripley to say, who the hell is this? I mean, she's literally a psychopath. Would have been fun. I agree with you, Mike. I would have pulled the trigger on that. She's nowhere near as big as Rhea Ripley, but she can pull off that complete psycho who could potentially be a thorn in Rhea Ripley's side really well. It's got to be better than Mia Yim. Because I'm sorry. Mia Yim is like a warm body. I'm not – she doesn't have a ton of – there's nothing about Mia Yim that screams the OC, and that's bad. Now, there's nothing about Nikki Cross that screams the OC either, but that could have been good because she's so odd, she'd be like the odd person out. And I think AJ and Carl Anderson could have been the straight men saying, I don't know, man. That's a weird girl. And Gallows being the one, Mike, saying, I don't see anything wrong with her. What's wrong? It would have been a fun, you know, couple of segments you could have had with that.
Especially knowing what Gallows used to do.
Right.
You know, when he used to be with Jesse and Festus, right?
Right. Yeah,
you
there's
know,
a lot of fun to play with that. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Could have had a lot of fun with that, Mike.
Yeah.
It's a shame. You know, they don't think out of the box. They just, well, who knew is coming in? Mia Yim. Okay, we don't have anything for her to do. She'll be the OC member. I don't know, man. The crowd's not getting behind her. The crowd's getting behind Rhea Ripley because they actually enjoy the angle she's doing with Dominic. You needed to find somebody to put in the OC that the crowd would have said, I'm definitely behind this person above Rhea Ripley. And it's not Mia Yim. So that's unfortunate. Yeah, this Raw could have been a lot better, folks. Sorry to tell you. It's you know, for a go-home show especially. It just felt like a SmackDown-dominated sort of Raw's a second-hand show. A lot of self-destructive things happened. I don't know, man. I don't know. All I do know is if Vince McMahon was in charge today, the Internet would be filled with Vince McMahon's destroying wrestling. And I see none of it. None of it today. And the only difference is because you like Triple H, so you're willing to give him a pass. Anyway, we'll be back on Friday with the War Games Survivor Series predictions. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.